We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in baseball isn't boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back. Second hour of the show. I have asked Carol and Dave to chime in here just for a quick quiz about home hygiene, I would say. How are you, Carol?
I'm good. How are
good
you?
Good afternoon.
With this weird question.
Oh, man. I am a lot better than I was last week, and thank you for whatever you had to do to pinch
cover
hit
you.
in my non-COVID virus
did you,
that
did
I had.
You
no,
know,
no.
Did you know that was in my contract?
Which part?
To cover for you.
No, I did not.
Totally kidding. It's not, but
yeah,
it is a part of the relationship.
Well, because you had to, I think, real quickly turn it around on one day, because I had last Tuesday, I thought I could work. I even told Steve, I'm like, I'm going to try it. And then I had second thoughts, and those second thoughts really were appropriate because it wasn't a great week. But look, last mm-hmm. night, let me explain. This is mm-hmm. real quick, but I just want to see how out of touch I am, which usually is a lot. So we're giving the little kindergarten student, you know, Alexa started kindergarten yesterday and she had soccer last night. So we're downstairs, we're watching TV. She takes mainly showers these days. Dave, do your kids take showers, or are they still?
Oh, I wish. No, they're still
bath
on baths.
Fun? Yeah. I know. And once it turns,
time.
Carol, I don't really remember this with my boys, but once it turned to shower, she just loves the shower. She doesn't want to go in the bath. So in the basement shower, you have to really let it warm up for a long time for whatever reason. It just doesn't. It's further away from the I don't even know why. I could say why, but maybe I'm wrong. So last night, Becky starts the shower, and I go in to help put Alexa in the shower, and I'm expecting that the shower is going to be too hot because she cranked it up and I'm going to dial it down. And lo and behold, it's actually at a really good temperature. And my wife cracks from the other room, yeah, it's not my first shower. It's not my first, you know, real, real smart ass way. Okay. All right. So there's attitude. There's toot there. My position was in this, we'll call it a mild dispute, was when I turn the shower on, I don't put it to where I think the temperature would be. I crank that thing all the way to hot, and then I dial it down.
So when you turn a shower on, you turn it all the way?
Crank to hot. All the way to hot.
Okay.
All the way to hot.
Okay.
All right. My wife is insisting that many people, my comment was, nobody does it the way that she does it, where they just kind of put it to the temperature they think. They crank it hot, and then they dial it back. So
right.
I'm testing that theory out here this afternoon with the panel.
I feel bad.
Can you...
I feel bad.
Because you're going to side with me. Because
yeah,
you're side
I feel
with
bad
me, right?
Because, you know, Becky, the only reason I like you at all, as I have said publicly, is because of Becky. And here's a chance where she might rescind our friendship. But I definitely turn it all the way up and then turn it down when I get in the shower.
Yes.
Dave?
Seems like a natural thing to do. Dave, what would
yeah,
you do?
Yeah, I'm the same. I feel bad. Becky, I'm sorry. I love you, but I'm siding with Mark on this one. And I actually don't even turn it down that much, to the point where I get out of the shower and my wife says I look like a lobster that's just been cooked.
You're one of those.
I'm one of those. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I like it really hot.
Kevin?
Yeah.
Well, I take a shower after I wake up. And, you know, when I sleep, it's like I go on the seven voyages of Sinbad to the land of dream world. And I need to be shocked back
into the... You get into a cold shower?
I get into the hottest shower
possible.
Okay. Just piping hot.
Yeah.
And so I love it. It's like I come out and there's steam rising off my toes.
Ew.
I'm with Kevin. I like the hot shower. I'm not going to describe my toes, though.
I do turn it all the way up, but I turn it down. I don't want the hottest shower possible.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm with you.
Well, that's natural.
Yeah.
This is only about proving my wife wrong, which is very rare.
And I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, but you were. So, you know, I thought maybe I was going to have to take it to Judge Jane, but I didn't have to do that. I think we've settled the question.
Well,
I think
wouldn't
she
take more
knew.
Time to do it
right.
If you did it her way, where you just kind of set it to
Thank
where you
Dave.
Want it. Yeah, see, I see.
Thank
I'm
you,
all
Dave.
About
yes.
the whole timing of yes. it, and I gotta get it as hot as I can, as fast as I can.
Does she think
yes,
that she's saving
exactly right.
on the bill or something?
No. I think she's just trying to create havoc, and she wanted to try to prove me wrong.
I thought that was
but
your job.
She's in, yeah, unable to do that at this point. So that succeeded. We succeeded here in our quiz this afternoon. I appreciate your help. And now I can say, see, I told you so, even though she's right 99% of the time. That's something she has in common with my daughter. It's amazing how right Alexa is, even when she says things, you know, because she's still trying to put thoughts together in language and she doesn't understand all words, but she says things sometimes and we often have an instinct to think that she's not right and she's seemingly always right, which may be a woman thing and not a child thing. Mm-mm. I don't know, Carol. Mm-mm. I'm giving
it's
you credit for that.
Not a gender thing. You're about see, you're, well, so, giving, so you've already lost me. You had me on
no,
your
no,
side.
No. I'm saying your gender is more accurate, more oh. right, more of the time than mine gender. I'm actually giving you credit.
Oh, thank
or so
you.
They
texting
think.
Right
or so
now.
They think.
The wife is texting me right now saying she's still right.
Well, I actually
she
was.
She will not accept the answer.
I was distracted because she was texting me and saying we're in a fight. And I was texting her back while you were talking. And I'm like, Becky, not us. Not Becky and Carol. Becky and Carol are not in a fight.
Okay, now I'm getting, wait, I'm getting, now I'm getting text messages.
We're getting,
so we have to check these people are. My friend Shannon says, turn it all the way up and then down. But my friend John says he's with Becky on the shower setting. So we do have a difference of opinion.
But it's still overwhelmingly, turn it all the way up.
I'm right overwhelmingly. Yeah, I'm still right
on this one thing. You better ride this. You better ride this as long as you can.
Don't you think I'm not going to, Carol Daniels? She's back at 3:30 this afternoon. I appreciate you guys. I don't know. It was just one of those weird things that came up. That shower in particular, though, is kind of annoying because every other shower just, you know, heats right up. And this is another thing that I'm weird. Maybe this is just me. But this will sound bizarre. Dave, you want to react to this? Maybe you don't know this. In my last two homes, I have not taken a shower more than a handful of times in my master bathroom.
Well, hold on. That's the whole point of a master bathroom, Mark.
I know. I get it. I do not like, nor did I like, in the last house. This is just I'm weird, Dave. Okay, I'll admit that. Last hour I said members of academia are weird. They are. I'm weird too. I like the water pressure better in the bathroom. Now, I tried to change out the shower head and all that. Didn't really work for me.
Come on.
No, I actually did, which is maybe why it didn't work. It didn't improve it. But no, I actually did try to do that. But I just have this thing where I like, you know, good water pressure, and I don't like just the water dribbling over me. And so I have sort of done that in the last. It's weird, right? Because that is exactly why you have a master shower. But I like the water pressure better. So.
So is that bathroom then like kind of your own bathroom then in that way?
Well, not really, but I kind of make it that just for shower purposes. This is revealing way too much information here this afternoon. And I don't want to create visuals for people that are uncomfortable. So we'll move on from there. We still have plenty to get to here this afternoon. We'll talk Cardinals baseball with John Rooney. Dave, did you feel sorry for Greg Holland last night just a little bit or not? I think what we determined was he cannot pitch in Busch Stadium. That's where he can't pitch. Correct?
No, it was very kind of, I did feel bad for him, but you know, in a way I kind of expected it though.
Yeah, I did too. The Cardinals whooping up on a former Cardinal. He must have some pictures on Mike Matheny because why he's still in the league, I'm a little confused by. But good start to that series with the Royals. Mr. Rooney with us at 4:20 this afternoon. Coming up here in just a couple of minutes, Dan O'Donnell is going to join me. He's with WISN Radio. We used to work together in Milwaukee. He's been all over what's happening here with the situation in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and elsewhere. So we'll get to that this afternoon. And also, I have one more thing coming up that I can't even remember. But let me look at the schedule because the brain is still not functioning at full capacity. Some might argue that happens on a regular basis. Oh, yeah. Paul DiGregorio, who is the, he's a local but also a U.S. and international election expert, former chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. And I like to touch base with him on some of these ballot issues with mail-in ballots and things along those lines. So Paul's going to chime in later. We also have an audio cut of the day still to come here this afternoon on KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
This is like all the black parents talk about. It's that phone call you don't want to get, and we got it. So you have to sort of be strong for each other, let your faith lead the way. And so after talking to his mother, she and my brother are asking people in Kenosha and around this nation to protest, but protest nonviolently.
That is Justin Blake. That's Jacob Blake's father. Unfortunately, that message is not getting through to many. Uncle, what did I say there, Dave? I'm sorry. The brain isn't. Did I say something else? It's not his father. It's his uncle, right? Yes, it is Justin Blake, his uncle. Jacob Blake's the victim in this, or whatever you would want to say. I mean, that's going to be controversial, too. So he's the guy who was walking around that car, and the officers were trying to get him to respond and to cooperate. He went back into the car. It looked like he tried to grab something, and then he was shot 8 times. He's still alive. Dan O'Donnell is one of my former colleagues from WTMJ in Milwaukee. He's at WISN Radio, also an attorney, joined us yesterday with details. Dan, it was another bad night up there in Kenosha. Did this also, you know, we were talking about this, did this get into other areas outside of Kenosha, into Milwaukee? Kenosha's about, what, 25 miles south of Milwaukee.
Yeah, it did. There was nothing in Milwaukee, but actually Madison saw rioting, a couple of fires lit, things like that. And Madison is in central Wisconsin. Kenosha is in the far south of Wisconsin, almost halfway between Chicago and Milwaukee for your listeners in Missouri. So there were some pockets of rioting and arson in Madison, but the bulk of it was in Kenosha. A number of businesses burned down. There was widespread looting. And just within the last 45 minutes or so, Governor Evers declared a state of emergency preemptively and activated the entire Wisconsin National Guard. Last night, there were about 125 guard members on the streets of Kenosha. They were barely noticeable, as there was essentially a stand down order given at some point after midnight last night. But this is a preemptive strike against what is expected to be another bad night tonight.
Yeah, I saw there was a message that went out from some of the activists that says Kenosha 823 and 824. I don't know if they include today as well. It says blank Kenosha PD, blank Madison PD. Those words start with an F. Blank Milwaukee PD, blank Chicago PD. No bad protesters, no good cops. Come prepared, wear a mask, bring water. No peace police. Do what you want. Blank crap up. So that, you know, that's the plan for a lot of these folks, and for the organizers in particular. They want people to loot and destroy. They look at it that way. But let's kind of focus on this case just a little bit, and if any new facts have emerged, Dan, because obviously we know here in St. Louis from Mike Brown and Ferguson 6 years ago that these things are complicated and nuanced, and things that get out in the immediate aftermath of an incident sometimes aren't true. We admitted yesterday the video doesn't look good here at all. Do we know anything more about what happened during this whole episode over the weekend?
Absolutely, Mark. In fact, Channel 12, WISN, no relation to my radio station, but the ABC affiliate here actually talked to one of the people who shot one of the videos. I'm not sure if it's the one that's gone viral and was viewed multi-million times, but he said that he heard the officers yelling for Mr. Blake to, quote, drop the knife, drop the knife. Now, I'll admit I misheard on the video. I thought they were saying drop the gun, but he said they were yelling, drop the knife. And remember yesterday I said it looked, I've probably seen that video 50 to 60 times. It looked as though there was something, I couldn't tell what it was, but there was clearly something in Blake's right hand as he's walking around the car. If that's, as the officer suggested, a knife, that completely changes the dynamic of the story immediately, because then he's not only armed during this encounter with a deadly weapon, a knife is most certainly a deadly weapon, he's potentially reaching for another weapon, because we do have reporting, though it hasn't been confirmed, that he told the officers he was, quote, going to get his gun. this would completely change the story. And now we have a witness at least saying the police thought he was armed with a knife. Now, I've been able to figure out why exactly the Kenosha Police Department hasn't said anything. They're no longer in charge of this investigation. It's the State Department of Justice and the Attorney General Joshua Call, who is a Democrat and a very liberal Democrat, has ordered no comment about the investigation. He, however, when pressed, when he was actually asked by reporters, was Mr. Blake unarmed, he refused to answer.
And it's my understanding that in Kenosha, they do not have body cams. Is that correct, Dan?
Not widespread. You're kind of putting me on the spot. I know there was some municipal, I think some of the cops have body cameras, but not all of them.
Yeah.
This is in cities the size of Kenosha. This is a big thing because body cameras are very expensive, not just to purchase, but to maintain, to have all of the storage for all of the hours of video that are being recorded. So, no, the officers, I believe, were not wearing body cameras at the time. And that's unfortunate because that could have done a whole lot to answer some of the questions that are still outstanding here.
You know, and it doesn't really, in the end, I don't know that any of this matters from this standpoint, because even with George Floyd and many of the other cases, the protesters take off on something. They see this as an injustice to an African-American, and it doesn't matter what else happened or whether it was a justifiable use of force. Look, I think you can make a case, and this is where we need to have serious discussions. How serious of a threat was this guy with the knife? And then, you know, Dan, what people always say is, well, you didn't need to fire the gun 8 times. Unfortunately, that it's not how it works. And this guy, you can say that, but this guy's still alive after 8 shots. So if he comes at you with a knife, you're not sure what's going to happen. I'm not going to justify what the officers did here because I don't know exactly the circumstances, but it never works that way on the other side because people leap to conclusions. And now you have this entire community that has been ravaged, and they'll now be known like Ferguson for this event. I saw a couple of horrifying videos today and posted one in particular with this shop owner that was just trying to keep his building and his business from being burned down. And he's basically knocked out onto the ground. There's some other folks that basically try to help him, but is anyone going to face consequences for what's happening up there, Dan?
If Wisconsin is like any other state that has seen this, no, probably not, unless it's an absolutely egregious, heinous crime. Like, for example, 2 months ago in Wisconsin, you had Tim Carpenter, an openly gay Democratic state senator, beaten to the point of unconsciousness during a riot in Madison. There were 2 women who were actually charged with that crime. But in Milwaukee, there were riots on the first weekend after George Floyd was killed. And very famously around here, the city attorney is refusing to prosecute any of the curfew violation tickets that were issued to people who were out taking part in the civil unrest. 2 months later, still no action on any of those tickets. So it's kind of an open question. If there are people who are identified, is there going to be this sort of cowering in fear before an angry mob so there isn't any prosecution or, ironically, any justice for the victims of the crimes that are committed by the people who are screaming at the top of their lungs for justice and burning down businesses in the name of social justice?
It is a mess, and you know, you got to brace yourself for another crazy night up there. Dan O'Donnell, always appreciate your help. Thanks, Dan. Hang in there, man.
Nah, thanks, my friend. Anytime you need me back, I'd be happy to.
I appreciate it. Look, this is one of those deals, and I'm not going to go on a limb with what happened in Kenosha, but I have made a prediction on George Floyd. And look, these cops, including Derek Chauvin in Minneapolis, they will be found not guilty. I'm relatively convinced of that in Minneapolis based on the additional body cam footage and the other testimony that's come out up until this day. I know that people aren't going to like that. I'm not saying it was justified. It was a horrific thing to watch. But when the case is put together, if it does go to court, or even if anyone takes the time to do some real journalism of what happened in the lead up to what happened with George Floyd, the circumstances are a little different than what you've been led to believe. Same thing with this guy. Now, I don't know what happened. And I don't think he should have been shot dead. He wasn't. He's still alive. Can't justify the shooting because I don't know if there was a knife. We don't know a lot of the facts, but is the option then for the cops to let this guy who's a fugitive wanted for domestic violence and sexual assault? There's kids in there. The kids could have been in danger. Everyone's saying, well, you know, now you've made these kids watch their father get shot 8 times, which will definitely devastate them. I'm not going to make a case against that. But what happens if you let the guy get in the car under those circumstances? Was he on something? All these questions that have not been answered, but people want to jump to conclusions, which is pretty easy to do, I guess, these days. We'll come back after the news. All right, welcome back. Great Cardinals victory last night. John Rooney with us, 4:20 this afternoon. Our regular conversation on Tuesday, Thursday, although we're going to push that up tomorrow and do it back-to-back Tuesday and Wednesday. We have baseball, a doubleheader on Thursday afternoon. So we still don't know. I guess I'm even still wondering how this election is going to turn out from a turnout perspective, using the word turnout twice there back-to-back. Didn't mean to do that. But just how are we going to be voting? I'm not particularly comfortable standing in line for a long time. I think we should simplify the process of voting for the most part. I really do. And I know there's a lot of Republicans that seemingly don't want to do that. Paul DeGregorio is a U.S. and international election expert. He's worked on these issues for many years. He trains elections officials in other countries around the globe. He's the former chair of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. He's right here in St. Louis. Hey, Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Glad to hear you're feeling better.
Oh, thank God for that. All right, so how do you think, let me just start with this question. We go forward just a couple of months, and we're all going to vote for president and all these other offices in November. What portion of that at this time do you think is going to be done in person versus mail-in ballots?
Well, my guess, and it's based on the recent primary we had, but also the interest in the presidential election, is that we can approach 50% of the people voting by absentee or mail in Missouri, and probably the same in Illinois. We had about a 40% in Missouri in the primary, particularly in St. Louis County. But I think we might do better than that because of the interest in the presidential election and because people are still nervous about catching the virus.
So you know what the president's been saying. He says the Democrats are pushing for voting by mail as an attempt to steal the election. I would disagree with the president on that point. I disagree with him on a lot of fronts. But I do have legitimate questions about mail-in ballots, and I think that you can do that without saying they're trying to steal the election. So in your estimation and experience, how safe would this be? Is there a way to somehow gin up the process and have ballots go missing? We've had some reports of ballots missing in other states from primaries.
Well, I think, you know, in every election, when people vote by mail, by absentee, it's not always the case that the ballot gets delivered to the voter or gets back in time to be counted by the election official. I mean, St. Louis County, the St. Louis area had over 1,000 ballots come in after the election, the recent August primary. So that's happened in the past, and it is cause for concern when that kind of thing happens. But when you take a look at this year and how many people have voted by mail already in the elections, just take Missouri, where 82,000 voted in St. Louis County, for instance, and another 10,000 plus in the city. So several hundred thousand people have voted in Missouri by mail, either absentee, this year already. And there's been no reports of voter fraud. Now, when you vote by mail, and that's going to be allowed certainly in the November election in Missouri and Illinois too, there's provisions. If you're voting by mail, you have to apply by mail, and you get your ballot back by mail, and it has to be returned by mail, and it has to be notarized. And so that's a difference, and, you know, that's a burden for people to do. Absentee is a different question because there's a couple excuses, particularly if you're nervous about getting COVID over 65, you don't need a notary. But just know, when you apply for an absentee ballot or a mail ballot, you have to provide your birthday and last four digits of Social Security and your signature. And each election authority, they're going to check that information against what's on file. And if it's not the same, they will reject that, or they'll contact you to find out, you know, well, did you apply for this? And there's been the ballot requests rejected because of signatures not matching. I mean, that does happen, and that's happened not just in our state, but in other states. But there's ways today to track ballots And you can track your ballot as it's being sent to you. In St. Louis County, they'll give you a stub when you get your ballot. You pull it off, and you can track to see if your ballot's been received by the election office. And, you know, you have ways now with your mail to go to the post office website and get a picture of your mail before it even comes to you. So there's different ways to mitigate fraud and also to track these mail ballots to keep fraud to a minimum, but to make sure that they're being delivered and received on a timely basis.
Right. So, Paul, are there other states for, you know, comparison standpoint that are allowing mail-in ballots or potentially will allow mail-in ballots without having a notary?
Yes. Well, right over in Illinois, right. They do not require notaries. And so there's plenty of states that do not require one. Now, Secretary of State John Ashcroft, J. Ashcroft, has a website that shows, you know, notaries are available to notarize your ballots. And I know from what I see on Facebook, there's churches, there's organizations providing notary services, free notary services for voters, because it has to be free if they're notarizing your ballot. But I would encourage, you know, your listeners to, if they're going to vote by mail, to apply early. I mean, to do it now. They'll be mailed out starting September 22nd in Missouri and Illinois. But if you're going to vote by mail or vote by absentee, get your request in now, get your application in now, so you can get your ballot in right away in the second or third week in September and get it back. Because the last day to request the ballot is October 21st, but it has to be in by Election Day. It has to be in by 7 o'clock on Election Day to be counted. And again, you know, in the August primary, there were over 1,000 ballots in the St. Louis area that were not counted because they were received too late.
So, you know, we can have arguments, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of arguments about how this could, you know, if you have traditional in-person voting, that's going to disenfranchise Americans because of COVID-19. But here's the one area where there shouldn't be disagreement I want your opinion on, and that's the Constitution. So the election takes place on November 3rd. The electors are chosen on that day. They have to vote on December 14th to select the new president. Those dates can't be changed without an act of Congress. And the 20th Amendment since the inauguration day is January 20th. So is there a realistic timetable logistically to get these ballots counted? The president's making claims that this is going to send things, you know, in question for weeks, if not months. What's your opinion on that, Paul?
Well, I think in terms of them getting counted, they will be. I mean, I think election officials around the country and certainly in our states are preparing for that. And I think they'll be able to get those ballots counted and get some results. And remember, results are not, you know, they're unofficial for about a couple of weeks until they're certified. What might happen and was likely to happen, especially in a close election, is litigation. And you might recall that in 2000, the presidential election, the Bush versus Gore decision was made just a couple days before the December 14th deadline. And so, yeah, you know, we might see a replay of that certainly this year with all the rhetoric and the talk and the litigation, you know, but it's an issue. And the post office, you know, that's been an issue too lately, and whether they're going to be able to deliver or not. And I have full confidence that the post office will be able to deliver the ballots to the voters and to get them back in time, because I think they're going to treat it special. But all this talk about the post office, you know, one little bit of history that, you know, up until the late 1940s, the Postmaster General of the United States was often chairman of the political party. So we had Robert Hannigan, who was from St. Louis, who was the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. At the same time, he was Postmaster General. This is from 1945 to 1947. And many of these postal jobs, mail carriers and others, were patronage offices. And many congressmen controlled who ran the post offices in their jurisdiction, particularly in rural areas. So, you know, there's all this talk about post office being political, but there was a time in our history when it was very political.
Paul DeGregorio, always great to have your insight here, and we'll see where this takes us here in the next couple of months. It'll be here before we know it, as we're already approaching the beginning of September. Paul, great to hook up again. Thank you.
Great, Mark. Thank you.
3:45. We have an audio cut of the day coming up. John Rooney has his regular Tuesday, Thursday Cardinals report at 4:20 this afternoon. I think we got Joe Potts on Sports Lake.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. Now, my favorite Bruce Springsteen album is actually The River, which was released in 1980. I saw Springsteen at the Checker Dome for the first time in 1981, and I was certainly familiar with this record and Darkness on the Edge of Town, but I was a 16-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid, didn't know much about Springsteen, went into Peaches Records on Manchester Road. My dad said, hey, I'll buy you any album. Kind of depressed, I think, at the time. You know, didn't have a lot of friends. I bought The River. It changed my life and became a Springsteen fan that has seen him dozens of times. Was very fortunate to sit next to him at a movie in 1980, and I could not be a bigger fan. But this record really is incredible. I had a chance years ago. Some people might remember the story of getting together with Kevin Costner when he came in for the movie Black and White. And he's a big music guy, and he talked about the cinematic nature of this record. Let's play Night, Dave. So when he opened up the show at the arena in 1981, this was the song that opened it up. And all of these songs on Born to Run really made an impression on music critics and music fans over the years. Some of you don't get Springsteen. I get that. But if you've never seen him in concert, you don't know the energy that he brings. And this was a tortured recording session. This has been talked about in documentaries, and different people have been interviewed about it. He was such a perfectionist. He drove the rest of the band crazy. Nothing worked. None of the takes worked. In fact, he got a mastered version from Jimmy Iovine, who was producing the record, and he threw the cassette in the pool because he did not like the way that it sounded. So they kept going at it, and he finally reached perfection, and this record came out. From this song, from Born to Run to Thunder Road, another epic Bruce Springsteen song. They just fit one after one after one. I remember Costner told me it was Meeting Across the River that was his favorite song. And this came a couple of years after Springsteen was on both the covers of Time and Newsweek and declared the future of rock and roll. But his first two records didn't really do a whole lot. And one could argue, and I think a lot of rock music critics and experts would, that if this record had not been as perfect as it was, if it did not make the impression, if Born to Run did not become that song that's so iconic in nature, and really, having seen it probably 40 plus times in concert, one of the best live rock songs in history. And even for those of you who don't like Springsteen, you don't get him, you don't think you're a fan, I promise you, the people who you are fans of, and those rock musicians, and even modern day Vampire Weekend and other bands like that, bands that have an impact today, they were influenced by Bruce Springsteen. And I have to go out with the big man here on this 45th anniversary of Born to Run. I think in 5 years, the 50th anniversary is going to be a lot more significant, probably something special that Bruce and the team will release. But the big man who died, gosh, I think maybe 10 years ago, in this epic solo from Jungleland, we'll go out with this, your audio cut of the day on the 45th anniversary of one of the best records in music history, Born to Run from Bruce Springsteen.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.